This nation was founded on the principle that all men are created equal.
We hold these truths to be self-evident.
That all men are created equal.
I'll tell you what freedom is to me. No fear. I mean, really, no fear.
Created equal.
This is Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm here the day after the first and maybe the only presidential debate in 2024 in the studio with Kerry Jr. II. He is the producer of this program.
Good day, Stephen.
Hey, Kerry. How late did you stay up last night watching reactions to the debate?
Oh, reactions to the debate. Not at all. Not at all.
I won't even say what time I went to bed.
Oh, goodness. I wanted to get my sleep. I know this show is early, so we have to get up early. So I wanted to make sure I was ready to come in today. So I didn't stay up too late after the debate itself.
Yeah, I was up very late scrolling through social media, watching some television, but really trying to take in how people were responding to the things that we saw
in Philadelphia. What's your first kind of initial thought?
Well, you know, I thought up front that both candidates actually were doing pretty well at staying on message and staying pretty disciplined. I was a little surprised by how disciplined former President Donald Trump was in the beginning. But there really was a point at which Kamala Harris, the vice president and the Democratic nominee, was able to bait him into some of his more familiar behavior, ranting and raving. It really was that moment where, instead of answering a question about what I believe was the economy, she started talking about the crowds at his rally.
Right. Yeah.
You could see the look on his face when that happened. And he really never recovered in terms of messaging, in terms of discipline, in terms of focus in the debate. And so that, I think, I think that defined really the back and forth between them for the rest of the time.
Well, I know it's hard to meet the level of impact that a debate we had back in the day earlier this year with President Biden and former President Trump. So coming in here with the expectation that it would be that consequential would be pretty hard. It's a high bar to meet. But I do think I kind of left that debate feeling like the candidates looked like the way I thought they would. Mm-hmm. They looked like themselves. Yes, President Trump, he fell into that old rhetoric, but that is what we're used to seeing from him. I just don't know how much of a lead that either candidate got from that debate last night.
It's hard to tell. I mean, we'll see what the polls say. The rest of the week. But, and I kind of want to frame this for the discussion that we're going to have with our guests and with listeners. These debates and the things that are going on in the campaign right now are really aimed at a very small portion of the American people. These people who are undecided at this point about what they want to do. Are they voting for Kamala Harris? Are they voting for Donald Trump? Or are they not voting at all? And that's really the question, is how well did either of the candidates message to them, and did they give them enough to make up their minds?
And I wonder if each candidate's vision for the country, you know, Vice President Harris's idea of moving forward, let's not go back to this divisiveness, and former President Trump's vision of this country is in a bad place and I'm the one who can fix it, which one resonates more with that population?
Yeah. I mean, that's the question. That's one of the questions. Mm-hmm. And I think the other is, how much are you able to identify with the candidates, right? How much, and here we're talking about in many instances, white suburban female voters. These are the so-called swing voters that are still kind of on the sidelines in some ways in this race. How strongly can you relate to them and get them to relate to you. And I think there were some real clues last night about which candidate probably did that a little better than the others. But I'm really eager to hear what our guests have to say about
it. Me too.
And, of course, I really want to hear what our listeners have to say as well. Who do we have with us today, Carrie?
Yeah, so this morning we have Zoe Clark. She is Michigan Public's political director. She's also the host of It's Just Politics podcast out of Michigan Public. And we're joined by Randy Richardville, who is the former majority leader of the Michigan State Senate.
Yes, a Republican from Monroe. Okay, Randy Richardville and Zoe Clark, great to have you here with us today on Created Equal. I hope you were not also up all night scrolling the way I was and that you're fresh and ready to have a robust discussion about this. Welcome to the show, both of you.
Well, I hope so, and thank you, Stephen. It's good to be here. Zoe, it's always good to talk to you as well. I wasn't up real late last night, no, but I sometimes watch these debates without the sound on. Just to get a feel. Now, seriously, because I mean, look, we're looking at politicians, right? We're listening to what politicians have to say, and we don't believe most of what they say anyways. And a lot of people are looking for the imagery. They're looking for the reaction. They're looking for how somebody looks on television or is able to communicate. If you remember, I know, Zoe, you don't remember, Stephen, I don't think you do either, but way back when John Kennedy debated Richard Nixon, and Nixon the makeup didn't work well. He sweated profusely. Nobody remembers what either one of them talked about except a soundbite or two. But John Kennedy just took the place by storm because of his appearance.
Well, the idea, right, was that if you were listening on the radio, you thought Nixon won. And if you were watching on television, yeah, you thought right? JFK had won. Mm. And I don't remember it, but I was a poli-sci major. I've watched plenty.
I don't think any of us were.
I was only about four, but yeah. You know. And,
Randy remembers it deeply.
Yeah, so he's a deep kid.
So I want to start with the moment where I think this debate took a turn and got away from what was a rather disciplined and I thought pretty substantive back and forth between the two candidates. I mean, it started off as a pretty weighty debate. And then there was a question posed to Vice President Kamala Harris. I believe it was about the economy. She kind of answered it, but then she baited Donald Trump in a way that was not just very obvious, but almost solicitous in the way that she sort of dropped that in there, and I thought that he would be able to resist. I mean, it was such an obvious kind of debate tactic that I thought he would kind of run around it, but he didn't, and things went really differently after that. First, let's take a listen to what Vice President Harris said.
Tell you something. He's going to talk about immigration a lot tonight, even when it's not the subject that is being raised. And I'm going to actually do something really unusual, and I'm going to invite you to attend one of Donald Trump's rallies, because it's a really interesting thing to watch. You will see during the course of his rallies, he talks about fictional characters like Hannibal Lecter. He will talk about windmills cause cancer. And what you will also notice is that people start leaving his rallies early out of exhaustion and boredom. And I will tell you, the one thing you will not hear him talk about is you. You will not hear him talk about your needs, your dreams, and your desires. And I'll tell you, I believe you deserve a president who actually puts you first. And I pledge to you that I will.
So, you know, I know that candidates undergo an awful lot of debate prep with their campaign staffs. And I imagined, as I was watching last night, that this moment probably played out many, many times in Donald Trump's debate prep. And that his advisor said, this is the thing to watch for. Don't fall for it. Don't jump at it. And yet his response to that statement and the rest of his performance really became defined by what Vice President Harris said. Rally size. It's one of his Achilles heels. I mean, he can't resist jumping at that. Randy Richardville, I'm going to start with you. What did you make of where the debate went, I guess, after that moment?
Well, I think you're right. And there's a fair amount of baiting going on. I was a little surprised at how much they both fit their roles, so to speak. Kamala Harris more or less was a prosecutor during the entire debate, I thought. And Donald Trump was his own defense attorney. He was defending everything he was talking about, and then he would change the subject and they'd go back and forth. The one thing I was a little troubled by, you're right, your opening comments, Stephen, I think we're right on. Usually there's about 30% of the country is Democrat, about 30% is Republican. They vary in numbers around the states, about 40% independent. That 40% is who normally you would be playing to. At this point in time, I don't think it's 40%. I think it's between 10 and 20 that are undecided. Yeah. And so they both needed to be playing to that little group in the middle. Mm-hmm. Both of them played more to their bases, though. I don't think anybody won this debate. I think they both survived the debate. Mm. But it was interesting to me how much she was on the prosecuting side the entire time, and he seemed to be defending himself, his record, et cetera, the entire time.
Yeah.
There are only seven states that matter: Nevada, Arizona, Georgia, North Carolina, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania, I think, is the critical state of those seven. And they're all like within 1 or 2 points. Mm-hmm. So did either one of them win that middle? I don't think so. Did either one of them appeal greatly to those undecideds? I don't think so. They both survived, though, to fight another day. And I think that's mostly what happened last night.
Mm-hmm. Zoe, what did you make of that moment in the debate and where things went? Sort of after that, I feel like it went off the rails.
You feel that way because that's when it did go off the rails. Stephen, it was about 25 minutes into the debate, and it was actually a question about immigration.
It was about immigration, that's right.
And
not the economy.
The vice president basically said, I invite you to attend one of the former president rallies. I mean, this, let's also note that because so much debate prep happens, it was very clear that this was a line that had been workshopped,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
But it worked, and she delivered it powerfully. And that was then when we got to Donald Trump talking about World War III. That's when we sort of brought up the infamous eating dogs in Springfield, a quote I never thought I would read actually back from a presidential debate. And so I think that was the moment where she did bait him. He took it, and the debate, to your point, really sort of changed at that moment. But I think Randy put it really well, that it was sort of a prosecutor and then someone playing their own defense attorney.
Yeah.
What both of them needed to do was inspire their bases, and that happened, right? Check. Both bases are inspired.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing that both of them needed to do were persuade the persuadables. This is this group that we're talking about.
Yeah.
And I just don't know that Donald Trump, if you are going, I'm just not sure, saw him last night and said, oh, yeah, this feels good. Whereas you're not quite sure about Kamala Harris and you watch her. I don't think she did any damage last night. For sure.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to continue talking with Randy Richardville and Zoe Clark about last night's presidential debate in Philadelphia. We really want to get going with the listeners. Call and tell us, how much of the debate did you watch? What did you take away from it? Are you someone who is undecided? If you are, did last night's debate help you make up your mind? Did you learn something about one of the candidates or both of them that pushed you in one direction or another? 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter, hashtag created equal, or at WDET. We'll be right back with more Created Equal. Back with more Created Equal. from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and with me is Zoe Clark. She is the political director for Michigan Public. That is the public radio station in Ann Arbor. And we've got Randy Richardville with us. He is the former majority leader of our state Senate here in Michigan. He is a Republican from Monroe. What we're talking about is what I think many people are still talking about today, which is yesterday's presidential debate between Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump. It was the first debate between the two of them. It may very well be the only debate that we get to see. The question is, how well did either of them do, not just in rallying Democrats or Republicans for the upcoming election, but appealing to that ever more critical slice of voters who describe themselves as independents or undecideds? Those are the folks, of course, who are going to play a huge role in deciding who wins in November in many of the key states, including Michigan. A lot of the messaging in last night's debate was absolutely targeted toward those voters. How well did Kamala Harris or Donald Trump do? We want to hear from you as well. How much of the debate did you watch? What did you draw away from it? If you are someone who's undecided, what did you hear during the debate? And did it help you make up your mind about what you want to do in November? 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter, hashtag created equal, or at WDET. Okay, I do want to talk a little about the contrast in message between the two candidates. And I thought that was another kind of key part of last night's debate. I've read over and over again that one of the things that voters are attracted to in presidential elections is the idea of hope, of optimism, and that many, many times, most times, in fact, the candidate who is best at capturing that sense of optimism about the future is the one who can win. I want to listen quickly to a clip of Kamala Harris talking about her vision for, I guess, leadership and what her candidacy represents in terms of a new chapter, and then get our guests to respond. Let's take a listen to what the vice president said.
Clearly, I am not Joe Biden, and I am certainly not Donald Trump. And what I do offer is a new generation of leadership for our country, one who believes in what is possible, one who brings a sense of optimism about what we can do instead of always disparaging the American people. I believe in what we can do to strengthen our small businesses, which is why I have a plan. Let's talk about our plans and let's compare the plans. I have a plan to give startup businesses $50,000 tax deduction to pursue their ambitions, their innovation, their ideas, their hard work. I have a plan, $6,000 for young families for the first year of your child's life to help you in that most critical stage of your child's development. I have a plan that is about allowing people to be able to pursue what has been fleeting in terms of the American dream by offering a help with down payment of $25,000 down payment assistance for first-time home buyers. That's the kind of conversation, I believe, David, that people really want tonight, as opposed to a conversation that is constantly about belittling and name-calling. Let's turn the page.
Vice President
and move
Harris,
forward.
Thank you. Let's turn to policy. President Let's turn Trump, back to policy.
Okay, so that was Vice President Kamala Harris in a very expansive statement talking about what she sees as her role as maybe the next leader of our country. I would play a similar clip from former President Donald Trump if we could find one. There wasn't really a moment in last night's debate, to be fair, where the former president talked in those kinds of terms about what he would do if he is elected again to the presidency. So, Zoe Clark, let's start with you. Give us a sense of how you heard what Kamala Harris said in that statement, and how you think, again, these undecided voters, people who are just not sure yet what they're doing, and are looking for some sliver of hope or optimism. Did she hit the right notes there?
Yeah, look, we've talked about this all summer, since July 21st at 1:47, a minute after Joe Biden tweeted 1:46, right, that he was not going to run again. Democrats suddenly, I think, felt joyful and hopeful. I think there was this layer of dread. Someone tweeted last night, the real winner last night of the debate was Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats who pushed Biden aside. Mm. And I think that what Kamala Harris has tried to do since July is be this joyful warrior. It's something, and Randy, I really want to hear your thoughts on this, because you worked so closely with Gretchen Whitmer for so long, a friend of yours, who also has this persona of joyful warrior. And we have continued to see Kamala Harris play that role. Last night, you know, those double screens where there was, you know, Trump's face sort of furrowed brow, and then Kamala just sort of looking at him, right? Versus Trump's message. But I, you know, Stephen, to your point, I wasn't expecting to hear something different from Donald Trump. I mean, this is what he talks about, that he is concerned, scared for this country. Again, he evoked World War II or III at least two times during the debate. So I didn't expect anything else. But to your point about what voters want, look, voting is emotional, right? At the end of the day, voting is an emotional choice. And so people are either going to vote out of that fear and being scared, or are going to vote about being hopeful. And again, we keep hearing from the Harris campaign this idea of we won't go back.
Yeah, yeah. Randy, to be fair, I mean, former President Trump did try to put some ideas forward. He talked about tariffs and his belief in the power of tariffs. He pointed out that many of the tariffs that he put into place while he was president were kept in place by the Biden administration. Of course, he talked about immigration and his belief that to solve the illegal immigration problem in this country, that things like mass deportation may need to happen. He talked a little bit about how that would work. He talked about lowering taxes. But again, I think if you go back and watch the debate, you don't get this moment where he is kind of hopefully laying out an agenda for the next 4 years that says, hey, things are going to get better for you. Things are going to change in your life that you care about. I felt like that was just, it was a missed opportunity. And of course, it had a lot to do with the way in which Vice President Harris was, you know, abating him into saying other things.
Yeah, well, it was interesting to me to listen to. You probably heard him mention, I don't know, probably half a dozen times, the past 3.5 years.
Yes.
He was talking about Joe Biden, or he was talking about her leadership, or his perception that there was a lack of leadership there. Or I think he was, instead of painting a picture for the future, he was looking at his 4 years and comparing them to the last 3.5 years. That, you know what I did. You already know what it was like when I was here. This got... You know, this whole election was a mistake, and therefore the last 3.5 years were a mistake. And I'm contrasting my 4 years with the present administration. And it's obvious to me what you would see. I think that was his painting of what the future might look like. The one thing, though, I'd be concerned about, I'm a conservative Republican, obviously, and I respect the other side. Remember Michael J. Fox in An American President, where he, you know, coaches Michael Douglas. Neither one of these two had a Michael J. Fox in their corner, it seemed to me. Because when he talks about them, you know, craving leadership and would drink sand to get it, that group in the middle, neither one of these people said, you know what, I can't stand where he's coming from. I can't stand where she's coming from. However, I promise you this, with a 50-50 Congress, I'll work together with whoever is there. Hmm. I will work together. You know, nobody said to that little sliver in the middle, look, you're tired of us versus them. You're tired of trying to make a choice between the lesser of two evils. I'm going to work with the other side. Nobody said I'm going to work with the other side. You talk about the time Governor Whitmer and I worked together. We may have disagreed, and she practiced at the mic every time at the end of the Senate, and that honed some of her skills. Mm-hmm. But we put aside things. I'm not going to change her mind on abortion. She's not going to change my mind on the Second Amendment. So let's find the things that we can and work together. And I think people actually looked and said, I like the fact that you two worked together. Neither one of these campaigns said they want to work with the other side. They all just disparaged the other side. It's kind of like if Democrat Airlines did nothing but put commercials on about Republican Airlines crashing and Republican talked about the lack of service, the Democrat, nobody wants to fly. And that's why people are staying home. They're saying, I don't want to fly in these airlines. They're both falling apart.
Yeah. So Randy, what did you make, though, of the substantive ideas that both candidates put forward? I mean, Kamala Harris had a very long list of things, 50,000 in tax credits for small businesses, $6,000 in tax rebates for individuals. I mean, it was a more detailed set of ideas than I think we've heard before.
Some of them I think might backfire. And let me explain that. Bernie Sanders, you know, hey, you know what? We should give everybody college for free. Mm-hmm. Some of us sat back and said, who's going to pay? Somebody's going to pay for that. Somebody's got to pay for that. Here I am, an existing homeowner. So you're going to give $50,000 to somebody else to buy a home. Hey, you know what? I've had a small business that I've, you know, worked through COVID, almost went out of business. And now you're going to give credits to somebody else. It almost sounds like you're trying to buy my vote. And we're talking about us, this country being in a space where we owe, you know, the national debt. But here, my economic plan consists of a number of giveaways. So vote for me and I'll give you something back. Hmm. I mean, that could splash back that way. And I think some of us that do have, you know, an economic background, I've got several economic degrees and study that kind of stuff pretty in depth, I guess. When Rick Snyder helped to reformulate the tax system in Michigan, I was a big part of that. We went from 53rd in the country to the top 10. Mm-hmm. I didn't hear anything substantive like that from either side regarding tax revenues and how that would be affected by the Fed or money supply or inflation. It was just kind of a mumbo jumbo of economic stuff. You know, if you go back to when Ronald Reagan was debating the first George Bush and the voodoo economics, mm-hmm, came out. Do you remember, mm-hmm, that?
Sure.
This is I don't know what you would call is more than voodoo. This is witchcraft economics. I mean, because nobody had anything but, hey, if I give you money, the economy is going to go great. And if I put up tariffs and fight the rest of the world so they give us back what we deserve, then the economy is going to be strong again. None of it was real substantive as far as here is an economic plan for our country for the next 4 years.
Yeah. Zoe, what did you make of the substantive nature of the things that Kamala Harris was saying? And, of course, what Donald Trump was saying about the vision he has for things like immigration and tariffs.
Yeah. Well, and let's be clear. I think the moderators tried. So I was on a call-in show right after the debate wrapped, and someone called in and said, I wanted 20 more minutes on tariffs. And I was like, my man, like, I understand that. But when you've got 90 minutes with two presidential candidates, you're not going to get 20 minutes on anything. I mean, I timed each section. It was 10 minutes on the economy. It was 10 or 15 minutes on abortion, right? And then, you know, you have to get into foreign affairs. So Afghanistan, Gaza, there was climate change. This is very difficult. And it's one of the reasons why I think there is such a push to have Kamala Harris do more interviews so that we can actually hear policy proposals. Now, that's the policy wonk in me. If you talk to the political professions who are running campaigns, they're like, why would we? Right. You continue to run on this sort of optimism, again, this hopeful warrior. But, you know, I think to that point, I think there are actually voters who really do want to better understand policy and do want to understand what a 20% tariff would actually mean. Or when Donald Trump then was talking about, you know, Obamacare and said something like, what, I have a plan or concepts of a plan or something like that. It reminded me of a West Wing episode where, you know, Jed Bartlett goes, I have a secret plan for inflation, right? But I mean, I think that is what voters want. But I don't know that debates like this are structured. You know, Stephen, you have been moderators. It's hard to get policy proposals in moments like this because it does end up feeling like you're going for a soundbite.
No, so, Zoe and Steve, real quickly, if I might, I have a group text with a bunch of former leaders in state government.
Michigan. You should add me and Steven to that, Randy.
I could do that. But they, I don't ask for it. It's like having NewsNet in my backyard, you know. I mean, they just send stuff because they're addicted to it. And so they send me things all the time throughout. But one thing they said was, I found this interesting. There was some bias toward, it seemed that the moderators fact-checked one group only. They only fact-checked Donald Trump. It seemed like they had in their pocket what they were going to check as soon as the answer came out. And what they were saying is, you know, these undecideds in the middle hear about the media bias. They hear about it, but they only hear about it from people like Donald Trump. If it's real, did they perceive last night that there was some media bias in the way the questions were asked and the fact that bang, I'm gonna point right at you, almost like an expert witness for the prosecuting Kamala Harris. So that's did you see or feel any of that? I don't want to know. I don't want to come from a biased standpoint and say, I saw it.
I absolutely thought they were fact checking Donald Trump more than Kamala Harris. But the truth is that he stretches the truth more, and that's a generous description of what he was doing last night. I mean, he's the one who says things that require a fact check. I mean, he said all kinds of things last night that that were objectively, I mean, just untrue, but then denying things even that he had done or said before.
I get the point, but is that the mediator's role to be saying, hey, we've checked and we don't think that fact is right?
In fact,
he said, I think this person believes this way, and they said there are no laws in any state that believe that way. He didn't say there was a state law any place that allowed, post-birth.
He was saying execution. It happened, right. He kept saying it happened.
Well, and maybe it does, but that's not, he's not saying it was legal anyplace, and their fact check said no laws allow this.
It's not legal, right? Yeah.
Right. So that's not really checking the facts that he's saying, whether it happened or somebody believes it should happen. And that's where it came across like, wow, that didn't seem right, you know, to throw that out there when the public should be making that decision is the way. And I'm not saying whether it was right. I'm saying, does that affect that undecided voter that looks and says, wow, I can't trust the media as much as I can't trust Donald Trump? That's what I'm wondering about.
Yeah. What do you think about that, Zoe?
I think it's a great question. And I think in some respects, Randy, it goes back to where we are as a really politically polarized country, that we sort of go back to our silos, right? So I think that if you feel like it was unfair, you go after the moderators, right? It's just what you do. Or if your team lost, you go after the refs, right?
Yeah.
But to your point, I think you make a really good and specific point that if there is already a sense that the media, which it is not, let me just be very clear, a monolithic, the media, like,
right.
Randy, you have this text thread. It's not like the media has some, you know, that there's 40,000 of us on a text thread being like, okay, here's what we're going to do. It just doesn't work that way, right? But I think to the point, particularly when we look back to the debate from earlier this summer, when Jake Tapper and Dana Bash really did no fact checking, if you're watching both of these debates, that was very different. And that's really up to the moderators and the role that they decide to play. To Stephen's point earlier, the fact is one of these candidates does just lie more often than the others. And every now and then, you know, one person says it's raining, another person says it isn't. A job of the journalist sometimes is to, you know, go outside.
See if you get wet, right?
And see if you get wet.
Yeah.
Okay, we need to take another quick break. And when we come back, we will continue talking with Randy Richardville and Zoe Clark about last night's presidential debate. And we are going to get to the phones and to social media if you want to join. Give us a call. Let us know what you made of the debate between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump last night. Do you want another one? We're not sure we're going to get another one. Would it help you make up your mind if you saw them on stage for another 90 minutes talking about their ideas and the differences between them? 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter, hashtag Created Equal, or at WDET. We'll be right back with more Created Equal. You are listening to Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and we're talking about last night's presidential debate between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump. We've got Randy Richardville, a former Senate Majority Leader here in the state of Michigan, a Republican from Monroe, with us. We've also got Zoe Clark. She is the political director for Michigan Public, the public radio station in Ann Arbor. And we want to hear from you. How much of the debate did you watch? What did you get out of it? Are you one of the voters who has not yet made up their mind about what you're going to do in November? If you are, what role did last night's debate play in your deliberations? Did you make a decision because of something that you heard during the debate, or are you waiting for more? Key event after last night's debate, I think, Taylor Swift, one of the most famous people on the planet, said she'd seen enough that after the debate, she decided that Kamala Harris was the person who she was going to cast her vote for in November. What role does something like that play, especially when we're talking about white suburban women and their votes? They are the more likely moms of the Swifties. Does this maybe move some of them into the Harris column as we get closer to November? What do you think about all of those things? 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter, hashtag Created Equal, or at WDET. Okay, we're going to start today with Aaron in Detroit. Aaron, what's on your mind?
Good morning, Stephen.
Hi.
Hello. This debate showed us, in my opinion, how important and influential right-wing conservative media can be, this kind of niche media. Former President Trump last night thought it appropriate to proclaim illegal immigrants are eating cats and dogs. Mm-hmm. And this notion was apparently well-known on conservative media outlets. He got this from someplace. Now, if this grossly false information is out there, what else is? And what else do people take seriously?
Aaron, it's a great question. And we haven't talked much about either the things that were said about immigration policy or the things that Donald Trump said about immigrants last night. And I do want to take a second just to note that whether you think what he said about immigrants eating dogs in Springfield, Ohio was true or false, it absolutely fits into the category of the kind of xenophobia, the kind of racism, the kind of othering that is such a critical part of the narrative about immigration in this country right now. And that comes from Donald Trump. It comes from Donald Trump and his supporters. I was really, really disappointed, as you were, Aaron, to see that show up in the middle of a presidential debate. I was frankly dumbfounded when he said it. I thought the moderators tried to do a pretty decent job of debunking that. But what they didn't do, and I think even Vice President Harris didn't go far enough to point out that this is not okay. This is, you know, we're talking about people who are like us in the sense that all they want to be is Americans. That's why they come here. That's what they're. That's why they will risk anything to get to this country. This idea that there's something different or lesser or unacceptable about them because of where they come from, because of the color of their skin or the culture that they're part of is un-American. And I would be remiss if I didn't point that out. Randy Richerville, I'll give you a chance to respond to what Aaron's saying and what Donald Trump said about immigrants last night.
You know, going back some 8-9 years, it's always difficult to sometimes defend what Donald Trump says. And I have to also say, though, that he talked about sarcasm. He talks about exaggeration. When he explains something or talks a lot of times, he uses those methods, I think.
Did you think that's what he was doing there? I didn't get that sense.
I don't think what he was saying is that all illegals that come into the United States sit down and are hunting your animals so that they can have them for dinner. I don't think he's saying that. I think what he's saying is some illegal immigrants are of the point that they are so far gone or so far away from American values that they would consider eating your animals. Now, am I backing that up? Am I saying that's okay?
I know you're not.
That's
I'm not. I know you're not. Right.
But I'm just saying that I think he knows deep down inside, if he goes deep down inside, that that's probably not happening. But he's using the exaggeration to point to the whole sea of things that are problematic about not enforcing our own laws.
But isn't that kind of dog whistling, which is not new and is not new in the Republican Party for sure, isn't that part of the problem? I mean, let's go back to 2012 when Mitt Romney was the Republican nominee for president and lost to then-President Barack Obama. I will never forget what he said about the future of the Republican Party, that this idea of pushing people who are different from, you know, white Americans out of the party was the problem. And that if the party couldn't wrap its arms around the changing face of America, that it wouldn't win elections. And since 2012, in fact, Republicans have not won a presidential election by the popular vote, right? And they've only won two in the last 35 years. So,
and that's why I get criticized sometimes because I'm on board with eliminating, to going to the popular vote. Because what happens is, I think in the last 20 years or so, only 19 states have been visited by presidential candidates during the election.
Right.
They leave 31 behind.
Luckily, we live in one that gets visited like every day.
Right. We're going to start making luckily or not so luckily residency tax.
That's right.
But because I believe that the conservative message has a better overtone with more people than the more liberal message, that the Republican Party would win more if they had a singular message to give to the entire country. And what we do make mistakes with, I believe, as a party, is that we do put our tent, so to speak, we put the stakes deep in the ground so that we don't allow those others to look at a conservative viewpoint. Yeah. More Republicans that I talk to say, you know, I am and a lot of independents say, I am conservative fiscally. I'm conservative and like smaller government, closer to the home. But socially, I'm not as involved as you all are on the extreme parts of things.
Yeah.
So if we could open up that message and allow more people to be a part of our overall tent, if you will, I think Republicans and conservatives in general would do far better across the country than the way the system is set up today.
Yeah. Now, Zoe, what did you make of the dog comment? And again, like Aaron, our caller, is pointing out, this kind of creeping in of that kind of rhetoric into formal, mainstream narrative because it is so prevalent in some parts of media.
Yeah, there's things that I've said about the former president's administration where I would say I'm shocked. It's shocking, but not surprising. So, A, thanks, and I appreciate, Stephen, you talking about the fact that in many respects, this is a dog whistle. I think I want to talk broader, though, too, about what it means to have this come from a very small social media post to literally on the stage where likely some 50 plus million mm-hmm. Americans were watching. Mm-hmm. I came in this morning to the station, was talking to a producer who hadn't watched the debate and was like, what is going on with these dogs? And I think it's actually it's problematic for the Republican Party to allow these social media influencers to take up this much oxygen. Hmm. Because instead, this is what we're talking about. When I talked earlier in the hour about you got to A, inspire your base, which you did, right? But B, persuade the persuadables. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think you're doing that right now. And when we know that Americans say that they think Donald Trump would do a better job on the economy, whether he would or not, that that's what they say. The fact that Donald Trump is talking about dogs in Springfield, Ohio, instead of about inflation was again, a really missed opportunity for him and problematic, again, to your point, earlier, Stephen, about just society and where we're at today.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and even if you kept it on the subject of illegal immigration, saying, look, we have laws in place. If these laws are in place, why doesn't the current administration enforce them? It causes a lot of problems. And leave out the extreme example of some a far-right poster of dogs being eaten in some little town in Ohio, but instead talk about the issue in more depth instead of to sensationalize it. I think that would draw more people into the argument to at least listen to it and decide whether or not they thought it was relevant.
Yeah.
And this election is supposed to be about trust.
Yeah.
And both candidates were more politicians, I thought, than statespeople, you know, than statesmen or stateswomen.
Yeah. I want to go.
They both got dragged into that.
Yeah. Know? I want to go back to the phones here. Jacqueline in Detroit. Jacqueline, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning.
Hey.
I just want to say that I'm 71 years old. I have been independent since the 80s. And for me, nothing either. She was the debate a boxing match where she went to poke the bear to get a response. I didn't get anything as far as, I know, okay, $25,000 for first-time homeowners, mm-hmm. $6,000 child credit, and I forget the other one. However, what about me? I saw nothing in there about the prices I have to pay for food or my gas. And I mean,
so Jacqueline, I don't want to cut you off, but I quickly want to ask you, what are you going to do in November, and what will make you make up your mind? What do you need to see from one of these candidates to vote for him?
You know what? I'm going to be quite honest with you. Our democracy is gone when they force Joe Biden out, as far as I'm concerned. Mm. So, I mean, I'm not really interested in either of those candidates.
Wow.
Because I did not hear anything that might assist senior citizens at all. I mean, my Social Security and my pension is still taxed. Mm. I paid taxes for over 40 years, and I'm still being taxed. Mm.
Jacqueline, I really appreciate the call and that perspective. I mean, that sums up so much of what I think people are feeling. A lot of people are still feeling today. We've got about a minute and a half left. I'll give our two guests a chance to wrap this up. Zoe, I'll start with you. React to Jacqueline if you like, but give us a sense of where we are here.
Well, Jacqueline, I think that's fascinating. And what I'm really curious to hear and see, as we talked about at the beginning, is A, is there going to be a second debate? The Harris campaign is calling for one.
Mm-hmm.
We will see whether Donald Trump agrees and whether or not more policy proposals can be talked about. So Jacqueline feels like she's hearing more about what it means for her and for her pocketbook. The second thing, as we talked about too, is Kamala Harris starting to do more interviews. You know, what we know is 4 in 10 voters in a swing state like Michigan, according to a new CBS poll, says they still don't feel like they know enough about
Kamala
Harris and what she would do. I think that's an indication to Jacqueline's point that there's still some voter education that needs to be done on behalf of the Harris campaign.
Randy, we've got about a minute left. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, the one thing that I'd be most concerned about about is, you know, in Michigan, it's easier to vote now than it ever has been in history.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about the other swing states, but, you know, with 10 days to vote, or 8 or 9, whatever the exact number is, the get out the vote and people being on top of that right now, the feet on the ground with the 49-50 percentages, things like that, whoever does the best job of getting their base out, but then also who's voting, who's not voting throughout all the way up to election day. It's that last week or so is more critical now than I think it has been in decades.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Zoe Clark and Randy Richardville. Wonderful to have both of you here with us today. If we get another debate, I'll invite you back to talk about that.
I'd love to come back.
All right. That's going to do it for us on Created Equal. Created Equal is a production of WDET, which is a listener-supported service of Wayne State University.